proposal is 216 pages long. The response is limited to 50 pages, which is about double the limit set for many public procurement processes. There are 19 different criteria that are explained over 8 pages. For those who submit, it will cost them about $30,000 to $40,000 to create just the RFP response in some unknown pool of general contractors. That's big money for all firms, but is a substantial hurdle, a barrier to entry, really, for mid-sized and smaller general contracting firms. I attended the mandatory pre-meeting this morning. It did not appear to me that there were any African Americans, Asians, Native Americans, or Latino contractors in the room. You will get a high MWESB subcontractor and labor participation because Angela will make sure that the 35% goal is achieved. But you have already excluded some very capable prime contractors by setting the bar at that level and requiring that type of a response. Fifth is to simply say, to simplify the process. Reduce the paperwork where possible to create intermediate-sized projects rather than single large projects. The Water Bureau project is a perfect example. There are a number of different phases, a number of different buildings that will get built. There would have been opportunities, or could still potentially be opportunities, to break that down into smaller chunks of contract, which is, incidentally, one of the things that has been a successful strategy for general contractors in trying to achieve better diversity among our subcontractors, particularly as you're trying to grow emerging small businesses. Very difficult for them to take on a $5 million piece of the project if they don't have experience doing that. Bringing in two different subcontractors to do $2 or $2.5 million has been a very successful strategy. So I would just hope that you would work to keep it as simple as you can, obviously, and still maintain the contracting rules that you have. Beyond that, I would say that my observation of the advisory committee was that people were very frank, asked very difficult and pointed questions, tried to get to a deeper understanding of what the statistical results were, did not simply sit and listen to the results. They really did want to know, how are we going to improve the situation, and went out and listened to people in the process.
Do you have a jurisdiction that you work with that you think is sort of best practice for this simplification?
Well, some of the universities and colleges have procurement processes that are simpler. They will limit the response to 25 pages, for example, rather than 50 pages. Portland State University has had RFPs out that aren't quite as complicated as this. In the private domain, RFPs, I've actually provided RFPs to clients that are 5 to 10 pages long, and
maybe you could email me those.
I'd be happy to do that.
Great.
Marcella?
Thank you, Commissioners, Mayor. Thank you very much. I'm honored to be here today. I really appreciate the opportunity to raise my voice, especially coming from a country that if you do that, you'll be shot. Not kidding. So I, like the Commissioner Nick Fish mentioned, I was especially interested in the professional services. It is a challenge. It's a challenge because he said it's an elite profession when it comes down to engineering, perhaps. It's a science where women, as it is, you know, we're challenged continuously about our knowledge. So in addition to that, we're driven many times to take radical steps, like opening your own business to create your own opportunities, like in my case. With that in mind, I have to say and give credit to the City of Portland that they have done an excellent job of creating those opportunities for small businesses compared to other agencies that you may say, even the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers or City of Beaverton and so forth. However, that doesn't mean that you guys are clear from it. And the reason is because you guys are the key to our success. You know, working with the Army Corps of Engineers and trying to work with them in Federal Highways, they said, and this is a federal program supposedly to help minority small business like myself to develop and create opportunities for us. Their answer was, go back to the city and tell them to start you there, you know. And I mean, this is supposed to be a program to mentor you. So if you go away, there is no us. It's so essential and important. The professional services is a key element in your study. And the reason is because we're moving from the fields, at least in my background. You're more moving from the restaurants. You know, many times I ask, why don't you consider the professional services? And the answer was, from all that in the past, was because the majority of you guys are on labor. We're moving away from that. We're growing. We're not two generations behind. And I may be a generation ahead, representing many minority and women. So for me to help you clear up the road for those coming behind me is critical. So creating a disparity study with the professional services, it gives you a better and broader perspective. Because just for example, if the Asian community may not be in your construction areas, but they be more focusing on the professional services. So does that mean you discriminated against them? No. You created all opportunities somewhere else. But in it doesn't mean that you just get rid of them because you give opportunities. That's what it creates, those opportunities. However, I am concerned on the disparity study because I don't think it adds up. It doesn't add up at all. I see the numbers where it shows the utilization and availability. Mathematically, it just doesn't add up and it makes no sense. Just this morning, I was just talking to one of my friends here locally, and I was mentioning that why it doesn't add up. It just doesn't add up, and I was informed. I mean, I was looking at your matrix about the subconsulting and how are we distributed, and your benchmark numbers in relation to the overall percentage of utilization is based on the availability. There is two lists in here, that is availability firms and unavailable firms. My firm is in the unavailable list. So that means it's your equation doesn't add up. So thank you very much, and I hope that we can look closer to this. And creating a shelter marker program for the professional services will be a dream come true. Thanks.
Thank you.
All right, Mayor, Commissioners, thank you for having me. And I was glad to serve on this committee.
Can you state your name?
Oh, sorry. Maurice Romming. And there's a few things that I want to also go on what Marcellus was saying, is the fact of the matter is that as we look at the availability numbers as far as what the study shows for African Americans, for example, the total dollar value that shows for African Americans for both prime, subs, and suppliers, both certified and uncertified, is less than my taxable liability as one company. So that's concerning to me. As far as how we got there, one of the things that I've noticed as I was going through is 80% of the available firms, 80% of those firms that are doing work with the city and PDC currently were listed on that list as unavailable to do work for the city and PDC. And so when we're looking at the numbers and trying to determine what the utilization should be when we exclude 80% that are currently or have worked for the city or PDC in the past, and we're saying that they don't count as available, but then we reflect them as being utilized, then that changes the numbers drastically. So I don't want to get into the methodology because I think the methodology could be sound. I want to say that the implementation, when we have a company from Texas calling up on behalf of a company from Denver, calling up on behalf of a for the city and PDC saying, we want you to do a survey for a half hour or so, and that company does not respond. At that point, that company is now deemed unavailable, and that's from their executive summary in the BBC report. So that's concerning to me because they're currently working for the city or for PDC. We have people that actually helped write the report that are listed as unavailable. So I want to say, moving forward, if we are going to look at adopting this, that we really have to look at what are we going to do to make sure that we actually continue to include those firms that haven't been included in this study and actually do some sort of adjustment so that we can make sure that those companies can continue to work and continue to do business with the city and PDC. And so one other thing I noticed on the resolution, it referenced ESBs. And I don't believe the study addressed ESBs, so I was just curious on how ESBs got mentioned in a resolution that's pertaining to minorities and women. Thank you.
We'll come back to that. And Mayor, let me just say that, Maurice, the substantial changes to the executive summary that occurred from the time it was first released until it reached at this point was based in part on your involvement and the work that you did and the input, and we thank you for that. And when we get through with the testimony, we bring back the professionals. We'll address, again, the point that you raise about availability and utilization, because it's an important point.
All right. So well, thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Mayor, our final panel before we get to public testimony is Gail Castillo, Andre Baugh, and Jorge Guerra.
Welcome back to the City Council chambers. Glad you're here. Ms. Castillo, would you like to begin?
Yes, sir. Good afternoon, Mayor and City Commissioners. Thank you for having me this afternoon. The recent disparity study uncovers several concerns that the Hispanic Chamber would like to address this afternoon. First of all, we want to commend the City Council and also PDC for conducting this important study. As we know, in order to address problems, we have to have knowledge. We have to know where we are. So this study is an important first step to understanding what the problem is and hopefully addressing some of the concerns. The Hispanic Chamber supports the following initiatives for construction contractors. We support increasing the number of subcontracts. We also support establishing smaller contract segments. We would urge you to use alternative bid evaluations that focus on other factors in a bid rather than just low bid, a more qualitative approach to what you want as an outcome. We ask you to please insist on prompt payment of subcontractors. We hear too many stories about small contractors who are not paid. In some cases, they're not paid for about 120 days. This is not acceptable. This kills small businesses. We also suggest that maybe for some of the smaller contractors that you provide some upfront financing to help them cover some of their startup costs and materials. We would also ask you to collect better information about the subcontractors so that we understand some of their characteristics. We have some information, but I think further information would be helpful to understanding what the concerns are. We would ask you to change how subcontractors are notified about upcoming subcontracts and encourage their participation in bidding. We need to begin, not only the city, but the prime contractors need to begin building relationships early on, so that they can bring their teams together. They can start looking at joint ventures, partnerships, and other collaborative efforts. Expand the city's partnerships for training and technical assistance. Conduct more online training. Simplify the city's pre-qualification system. Increase the flexibility of the city's bonding and insurance requirements. In addition, the Hispanic Chamber recommends that the City of Portland and PDC utilize the cultural and technical skills of the Hispanic Chamber and other community-based organizations. Community-based organizations can conduct outreach to construction contractors to assist them to become certified and help them in their development, work with prime contractors to conduct workshops, provide technical assistance to contractors and help them grow their business. It's about creating capacity. Help the prime contractors increase their employment and promotional opportunities. In our case, we have a lot of Latinos working on these projects. Most of them are laborers, so we need to make sure that they're moving up. And help provide additional financing to contractors. As you know, there's very limited private sector financing. In our case, we have a very small revolving loan fund. The city might consider investing either in our loan fund or other loan funds that are out there that are community-based that can help the contractors. This and more is possible with expanded partnerships between the city, PDC, and the Hispanic Chamber and other community-based organizations. We have to make sure that all members of our community have similar economic opportunities. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and an opportunity to thank you publicly for the work you've done in the past as a city contractor, helping startups and existing small businesses stay in business and move forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Mayor. Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and members of council. I'm Andre Baugh, president of Group AGB, a small Oregon-certified disadvantaged business and minority business. My comments today are not about the disparity study availability or methodology, but about the promise of fairness and the fulfillment of equity that can result from the study before you today. As we all know, disparity studies are, by their very nature, controversial. The anxieties of equity and doing the right thing always enter our minds. Proving one or more groups of people have been discriminated against is uncomfortable and uneasy for a lot of people. However, that should not deter you from action or otherwise impede you in the ability to see now is the time to do the right thing. This country is littered with unused, marginalized disparity studies. Minority and majority individuals have raised their voices about the outcomes combined with a lack of commitment by the governing bodies. This inaction, unfortunately, caused these volumes of disparity studies to sit on the shelves and collect dust. You can't let that happen today here. You must understand that issuing a disparity study does not solve the problem. It merely identifies the gulf between the promise of fairness and the fulfillment of equity. Other agencies have had more significant disparities and done little to close the gaps. To reach fulfillment, the city should not follow the universal quest for easy answers and half-baked solutions, but face the disparities with directness and action. The city has adopted equity. Today, I ask the city to adopt a strong commitment to the solutions and accountability in the pursuit of equity. It is only through these things that the voices will be calmed. That said, the city should first endorse and embrace a strong commitment we see in your eyes and feel from your heart. Your commitment will be tested. Do not waver because of the anxiety or the unease, but resolve to move forward in the face of these challenges. Second, the city should adopt immediately the resolution of actions. Additionally, strongly support prime contracting and capacity building options. That's your biggest bang for buck, prime contracting. And lastly, implement a good faith effort which only utilizes minority and women, and extend the results to include workforce, because the workforce, a truly trained workforce, is your next minority and women contractors. And if apprenticeship is not followed and they're not trained properly, the availability doesn't matter in the future because they're just not going to be there. Third, the city should hold all parties to a high standard of accountability. You must review your commitment targets annually for progress, automatically make changes if achievement is not being reached, monitor it quarterly, and report it monthly to project managers. The city Bureau directors, partners, and the city auditor should be held to the same standards you are. So your bureaus, the people that you do business with, the county, the state, the federal government, directors should not be allowed to have excuses, as those excuses result in this easy solutions and half-baked answers. Remember, it's your commitment, it's your money, and it's your promise. I'm reminded what Martin Luther King once said, the ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in the moment of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at the time of challenge and controversy. I would say to you today, the significant measure of the city of Portland is not where it stood yesterday in comfort and convenience, but where it will stand in 5 years on this disparity study and ultimately the fulfillment of equity, which is part of the Portland plan. You have an equity office, and how you look back 5 years from now, not 15, but five, you'll be able to test whether or not this disparity study is successful in its implementation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown.
Good afternoon. I'm Jorge Guerra, president for the Oregon Association of Minority Entrepreneurs, OAMI. Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Commissioners, for inviting us to be here. And also work from Samuel Brooks, chairman of the board for OAMI. He sends his apology for not being present today with us here. But I will read for the record a letter that we have sent to all of you. And also at the end, I will make some comments that will come to the point. In regards to the letter that we sent, we commend the City of Portland and Portland Development Commission to continue to search for information that adds and supports to minority women and emerging small businesses. We believe the following comments are relevant based on the data and comments on the disparity study. The number of minority-owned businesses in construction and personal services in Oregon, the City of Portland, and the region is small, determining that capability and needs of each of the certified businesses is possible and will provide an opportunity to track and support the appropriate assistance to those businesses, the minority women businesses. Using a disparity statistical analysis alone as a means of providing support to minority businesses becomes counterproductive over time, because the direction of support is based on moving numbers, not developing skills and creating capability. Accountability for each minority woman and very small business outside contract is an essential function to ensure performance of outside contractors. Some City of Portland and Portland Development Commission designated individual must be assigned the responsibility for monitoring this. Conducting support programs for minority women and small businesses collectively fosters relationships that grow for all concerned. Fostering partnerships between minority women and small businesses multiplies the opportunity for growth and development. Supporting access to capital, management support, sales and marketing, utilization of technology, and networking creates partnerships that produce successful businesses. The City of Portland and the Portland Development Commission should strive to move minority women and very small businesses to sustainability and well as our contracts. As it relates to the efficacy of the statistical analysis done by the consulting team, OAMI believes its efforts are better spent creating systems that will help to grow and develop minority women and very small businesses. And OAMI looks forward in joining the city of Portland and Portland Development Commission in that effort. As OAMI has been active for the last 23 years, we have been providing to minority women businesses the support in different areas, technical assistance, marketing, access to capital. And we really see that that is a great opportunity for us to move forward, work together, and how we can help those businesses. Something that we mentioned in some of the meetings that we had is to all those who participate is stay ready to be ready, and it's a quote to quote. Because if they stay ready, they stay ready. They are ready to go and move forward into any job that come up an opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you all. Appreciate it very much. All right. It is 3:30, and we're going to take a 5-minute compassion break since we've been here an hour and a half, and then we will get from come back from break and go right to public testimony. All right. Portland City Council will come back to order from our break, and we will proceed with public testimony. We call the public testimony in order that people signed up. The local laws require you to disclose if you are authorized to speak on behalf of an organization, whether that be for-profit or nonprofit. We only want your first and last name. We do not want your address. We do not want your phone number. Just your first and last name and what organization you are representing. We do find it useful if you're known for representing a particular organization, if you could clarify for us whether we're listening to you, your own opinions or those of the organization you might be more closely associated with. That's helpful for us. So with that, Carla, would you please read the first three names?
First three are Roy Weedman, Derry Jackson, and Melvin Odin Orr.
Mr. Weedman, Mr. Jackson, welcome. Welcome back. Glad you're here. Mr. Weedman, would you like to begin?
My name is Roy Weedman. I own Bud Construction, a trucking firm here in town. And just to give you a quick history of me, I've been doing this for 20 years. I've worked 10 years on the light rail, many projects at all the airports in town. Right now I'm running the trucking on Highway 217. I've been out there for 2 years, so I've got a lot of experience. I network with just about every major contractor and trucking firm in town. With that being said, all that experience I've had, I wouldn't be able to work on any of these jobs, because it's very difficult for me to bid on because I'm not African-American or Asian, which I understand, you know, the issues that it's very sensitive with the social and economic deal, but it has an effect on us too. And so I got to ask what the intent of this study is, because it affects more than just African-American and Asian-American people. And myself, you know, and others like me, it's very, very hard to get work. And if I hadn't been leased on with an outfit called Salt and Pepper, they're an African-American firm, I probably wouldn't even be in the industry. And so you're going to have to – I hope the continuity keeps going here. I'm not
– You're right, Roy. Go ahead, man.
Okay. What the issue is, when you go to these big projects, the contractors have kind of found a loophole. And instead of going across the trades and getting a pretty good percentage in each trade, what they do is, I can only speak for my industry and then the trucking. I see it time and time again. They always kind of focus on the trucking. That's where they get their numbers and the flagging. For example, Commissioner Fish, I saw you on TV here recently on a Block 49. And now... I hate to bring this up because I wasn't at the meeting, but that brings up the point. I wasn't even notified, and I actually helped one of the firms make up a bid proposal, which they got to work on the job. And I was never even invited to the meeting, and from what I heard, it was all just African-American. And many of these firms repeatedly are on the same jobs, same, you know, I mean, same companies are on different jobs for all the city, ODOT, Port of Portland, TriMet, where I can't even get my foot in the door. And so it's kind of created an environment that's not equitable. And so the only thing I'm asking is a level playing field, and I would like to see where the contractors have to disperse among all the trades and can't focus their numbers in one small area. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Jackson?
Yes, good evening. My name is Derry Jackson. I normally speak on education issues, but today I'll be speaking a little bit on the construction side, representing NAMCO. NAMCO recently hired me, to be exact, James Posey recently hired me to help get a handle on what the disparity study is. So I'm going to make some comments about that. And I should admit that, you know, we need to realize the importance of folks like James Posey. My understanding is James hired the first African-American female truck driver in city. And these are profound things we need to be aware of and celebrate. In fact, the essence of what it is we're here to talk about, the disparity. I'm trying to get a handle on where I stand on the entire study. What I know is this. In government, I've come to realize there's a lot to say for juxtapositions. Something is said, and intuitively you think something, but actually what happens is almost the opposite. So unfortunately, I'm looking at this report through that lens. It's not your fault. It happens from the national to the city hall, that concept of juxtaposition. I would remind us to remember the words of the 38th Speaker of the House, Thomas Brackett Reed. One of the greatest delusions in the world is the hope that the evils in this world can be cured by legislation. To my good friend Roy, who I just met, I shouldn't say good friend, I just met him, I understand his dilemma. And the dilemma is a real one. African Americans especially have been pressed into some of the lower skill set contracts. We end up competing with the same subset of people, so it's no surprise that you keep finding the same amount of people. The answer is in our education and making sure that we can get some kids also ready to compete on the other level. But listen, Roy, especially, I want to share with you some things, man. These are some numbers I pull off of Oregon economic finance forecast sites, and they're pretty bad, of course. It talks about our economy. It's down. One thing we could count on is the construction industry. If we do our jobs right, we in government should make sure that our billings are maintained annually, not when it's convenient in the budget, because by then it's probably more expensive. So it's about how do we get there. But again, I noticed that when you look at our community, we're struggling. Poverty. Here is a study from Portland State. I'm not going to bore you with the numbers, but they're abysmal. And they say what we all know. That there are certain segments of this community that's really in harm. This contract, this disparity study, gives us the opportunity not for another transfer program, another welfare program, but this is legitimate work. When you look at this, I want you to be aware of the reality. There are kids on the street with no hope, shooting, killing each other, thinking that that's what it is. No, they could be on top of that skyrise as well, making some decent money, keeping out of certain other parts of your budgetary issue. I'm going to close on this point. Already in America, 1 in 10 counties, whites are in a minority, okay? 1 in 10 already counties in America, you're in a minority. This disparity report, I think, might even be somewhat juxtaposed in itself. Not here in Oregon in particularly, but I'm saying we should keep this in mind because there are real people suffering behind these things. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Welcome.
Thank you, Commissioners, Mr. Mayor. My name is Melvin Odin Orr, and I'm counsel for NAMCO, and I'm speaking here today on behalf of NAMCO. First of all, I think I will summarize my comments. We've submitted written comments on the disparity study, and I believe that the members have that available to them. But I'll summarize that this afternoon. But I want to preface the summary of those comments with sort of the distinction between defensibility and accuracy. Earlier, City Attorney Mr. Van Dyke mentioned the fact that one of the role of the disparity study is to provide a basis for the city's race-conscious activities. It's actually a little bit more than that. It's intended to be a guide for the city as they go forward to make decisions about public policy, and so far as to the extent of engaging in race-conscious activities, right? And so that's what the role of the study, and so the question is defensibility versus accuracy. NAMCO believes that the study has some issues with the study that we believe ultimately undercounts the availability of minority contractors. And I'll mention some of those for you. One of the things that we point out is that the study talks about both certified minority-owned firms and minority-owned firms generally. However, the study does not explain how they concluded that non-certified firms are in fact minority owned. One of the reasons for the certification programs is to make sure that any benefits that flow from the program, i.e. the goal of creating a level playing field, inured to those who have been determined to have minority race persons in control of the entity. And so without that certification, the question becomes, how does the study team know if the firm was in fact controlled by a minority race person? So that was one of the issues that we wanted to point out. The other issue was...
Could I interrupt?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
And I'll give you more time. So I just want to make sure I'm understanding the point, and I appreciate the obvious detail that you've taken and care that you've taken in sort of going over these issues. So is your concern that they identified non-certified minority firms and counted them or didn't count them or treat them in the appropriate way? Which side of that is it?
Right. It's not clear. And this is the reason why it becomes a question. Because if they identify firms that are minority-owned firms but in fact would not qualify to be certified, then in their analysis of utilization, they might count, oh, we use that firm. Therefore, utilization would go up. But if it's a firm that would not otherwise be qualified for certification, then it's an appropriate use of them as a part of the utilization numbers. But without having information about how they made their determination,
Would your remedy then that we would do that analysis of the non-certified firms?
Or? I think it would be important in order to provide transparency into the process to show, okay, for example, if they said, we call the firms and we ask them the question, are you owned by, and then went through the process of asking them the sort of questions that you would ask as a part of the certification process. Who are minority race people that's owners, you know, that sort of thing.
Thanks for answering.
Could I just have a follow-up question on the same topic? As we move forward and we want to track even more closely who's getting contracts, would NAMCO's position be that it's not okay to count folks who are local to us? We know who they are. We know, and we've asked those questions. Are we allowed to? Would you recommend that we not count firms that haven't got the certification, or how would you recommend that we document that?
We have no recommendation with respect to whether you count them whether you count them or not. The issue is transparency.
Have a professional personal opinion?
Do I have a professional personal? I know many firms that are owned by minority race people who have, for whatever reason, decided that certification is not something that they want to do, primarily because they don't contract with the government. And generally speaking, if you're not contracting with the government, certification, going through the state certification process, may have no value for you. Thanks. And so they may have a one-off engagement, making it not necessary for them to do that. So it just raises the issue. Thank you, Commissioner. The other issue is while the study does have some anecdotal statements about discrimination faced by contractors in the private sector, there's not a sense of the disparity in the utilization that exists in the private market. We think that having such an analysis would inform the jurisdiction about how dire the situation is in the private sector in order to think about the role that the city can play in remedying what's happening outside. So, for example, if you have a ABC, I'm just making it up, ABC prime contractor, and they only use minority-owned firms when they do city contracts, but when they're doing a project right across the street not owned by a government, they don't use, in my personal opinion, that would show that they are discriminating in the utilization. And unfortunately, I actually have a 4 o'clock meeting that I have to hustle to, so I'm trying to get through this.
Go ahead and complete what you can in the time you have.
Thank you. You're too kind, Mayor. The other issue that we raise is simply that as a part of the study, they explain their process, and they do what I consider to be a hybrid analysis, where they purport to identify the entire population of contractors that would be available, but then they note that there's basically 50% of the people in that population who provided no response whatsoever, and then they proceeded to do an analysis, and so it seems inappropriate. They do mention that they use this Monte Carlo analysis, and I actually I'm not a statistician, but I saw that and I thought that was sort of funny. But I think that that's something that the commission should consider in terms of the validity of their analysis. Finally, there is the issue about the counting that they did. And I think it'll be clear as you look at the study that there is a point in time at which the study team starts. And let's call that July 2010. They're counting the firms that exist during that time, yet the study period in question is the 5 years prior to that. During that time, we believe that there's the possibility that there have been minority firms that have come and gone throughout that time who would have been available and could have been used. And unfortunately, that's not accounted for, and we think that if there was some mention of that, it would better inform the commission on outside of what the actual ratio is, something that they might consider in terms of what effect has, what might have been the effect on some of these firms based on our pre-qualification system, based on our bonding requirements, our insurance requirements, things like that. And so let me close by saying that NAMCO stands as a partner for the city and other jurisdictions in terms of trying to create a level playing field. We think that the disparity study is just the next step in this process, and we look forward to working with the city and PDC in moving forward to creating a more equitable system, level playing field, and those sorts of things.
Since we're about to lose you, I wanted to ask you one question.
Yes.
When Maurice testified earlier, he said that he doesn't dispute the methodology, but he has concerns about the execution. I believe that his word was the execution. Is that a fair summary of your testimony, that you do not dispute the methodology used by BBC, but you have concerns about the execution?
What I would say is the issues that we raise are questions that we think the commission should consider in determining whether or not you think the study is adequate. What NAMCO looks for is leadership from the commission and the city of Portland on moving the issue forward. And so I think when Mr. Rami says the execution, I believe that it's the leadership that he's concerned about, because that's what we would look at as being more important than the study, is the leadership that comes with moving these issues forward.
Thank you, sir. Thank you all. Appreciate your time.
Possible make one quick statement?
Sorry. Oh,
okay.
You don't get a second bite of the apple. We'd be here all day.
The next three, please come on up, are James Posey, Tony Jones, and Gerald Deloney.
Mr. Posey, Mr. Jones, Mr. Deloney, welcome back.
Yeah, I'll let you go first, please.
Go ahead, Mr. Posey.
I think Mr. Jones is going to go first.
He's okay. First to sign up.
Oh, is that the way it goes? That's the way it goes? Okay. Well, let me just say real quickly, my name is James Posey. This is not fair and balanced. You know, this is a 700-page document, a lot of complexity, and you guys spent the first hour and a half talking to yourselves and the people you've already talked to over and over again. So there's a lot of things that we would like to discuss with you, and you're going to make a decision here today. This is not fair and balanced. Let me just say that from the onside. Let me just say real quickly, I'm here not representing NAMCO. I'm the president of the Coalition of Black Men. But let me just read what your disparity study says. Let me just summarize and say there is no disparity overall. And what it really says is that really minorities are overutilized. And, you know, that's a real key point, because if you go forward with programs and we're already being overutilized, I don't know how you can justify that. The other real key point that I want to make here is that as far as I'm concerned, you all changed the executive summary, and you smoothed it around a little bit. But really, putting lipstick on a million-dollar pig really doesn't change the fact that the pig is a pork. I'm just going to be real clear with you about it. When we start talking about 1.9, that percentage of utilization on the part of minorities, is going to be your legacy if you pass this agenda today. 1.9 is a reference to extinction. You can't hardly count that number. And so when you all institutionalize that figure and moving forward, you really are pegging future programs and future activity based on that 1.9. And so really that 1.9 hovers over everything you do moving forward if you approve that document. Let me just say, even in those 1.9 statistic, you know, no black people or minorities own any fuel companies. We don't buy any asphalt. We don't buy any concrete or any rock. We don't do too much maintenance on our material. So even when you talk about providing contracts and work to minorities, most of that money don't stay in our communities. They go out to somebody else. I see my time is up.
No, you go ahead. I'll give you more time.
Okay, good. Thank you. Most of that money doesn't stay in our community. So when you calculate that particular phenomenon and how it deludes the concept of providing work to us, it really devastates our community. And so you have to be really aware of that. This whole concept is of how this particular aspect of 1.9 will hover over our community and how it will inhibit our progress, because believe it or not, everybody's looking at the city of Portland for a framework of how they do business. And as good as Mr. Andrews was here, a fairly good contractor who means well, what's sticking in his mind is he doesn't have to do more than that 1.9 because there's no real basis for doing it based upon the study. And at the end of the day, most of the contractors out here will not do any better. The second thing I want to say is it's really important to look at what even your recommendations are, because they tend to focus on the symptomatic issues related to minority contractors. Let me just give you some idea. There's a lot of discussion about, I'm looking at your recommendation, insurance, bonding, et cetera. That was, Sam, as you well know, that was in the 1996 disparity study. Have you ever had anybody do a comparison between the recommendations of the 1996 disparity and the current recommendations? Most of that stuff is the same. Nothing's changed, menoprogen, et cetera, et cetera. Then there's other suggestions in this study. For example, the Atlanta Joint Venture. There's nobody from this outfit you all hired that's going down to Atlanta to see if those Atlanta Joint Ventures are working, whether they're really producing any results. I know, because I checked down there. Those things are a sham. They perpetuate the continual things that go on with these programs and these so-called throwing it up against the wall and hoping they'll stick and hoping to get rid of any real solutions to these problems. Finally, I want to say that at the end of the day, there's nobody home watching these programs to make sure that there's compliance and that outcomes are reached. There's nothing really strong about compliance in these programs. And to your credit, Sam, you did mention, however, that this is not a program that's isolated to the procurement program. There's a war going on within the city of Portland. Your purchasing bureau and the rest of the bureaus are fighting against these DBE and minority programs. You all have to arrest that situation and make everybody accountable. And let me just say, finally, we would not be sitting here having this conversation today if we would have gotten rid of Jim Van Dyke 15 years ago. Jim Van Dyke has been threatening you all with suits and legal consequences for the last 15 years. It's not even been subtle. He's been hitting you all with that. There has not been any suits in Oregon relative to DBE programs. In fact, around the country, there have been relatively few. So to raise the specter of legal consequences, et cetera, really, you know, I can't think of anything more devastating. I think if we were to run up and get the Ku Klux Klan and bring them in here and let them hover around this place, that would be not as intimidating as the impact of what your legal counsel has done in terms of depressing you all's attitude, more importantly, your leadership about changing the dynamics that's affecting our community. I'm sorry if I took so long, but at the end of the day, this is your legacy, and this is going to be meaningful for you. It's going to be meaningful for our entire community as we move forward. Thank you.
Mr. Mayor? For the record, you got 6 minutes.
Thank you very much, sir.
I don't agree with your characterizations. I find them pretty abhorrent, but those are your rights to say. Mr. Jones.
Mr. Mayor. Good afternoon. My name
excuse
is Tony.
Me, Mr. Jones, I have to just say I have to excuse myself. I've got Speaker of the House in Salem. I'm calling and other legislators I have to talk to about some domestic violence-related legislation. So.
Thank you. Sorry. Mr. Jones.
Hey, good afternoon, Mayor Adams, City Council. My name is Tony Jones. I'm Executive Director of Metropolitan Contractor Improvement Partnership. We provide business capacity building to minority contractors. My comments are I believe that the study still falls short, and I think we're missing opportunities. I do believe that it is an improved executive summary. It points out and acknowledges some specific disparities in certain areas, but my concerns have been sort of expressed earlier of the broader issues in Portland with regard to economic disparities in communities of color, African American communities, and other communities as well. We all know that all these communities suffer from gaps in income and wealth, and I know that BBC says that it's taken into account into the study, but what I really believe is that the 1996 study in conjunction with this study really gives the city and PDC leverage and a strong legal case to take strong action to address the disparity. And let me be clear that the disparity is with minority contractors. One of the other concerns I have with this study is that as a business service provider with minority contractors, one of the things I think the local industry has done is really been telling businesses, look, to participate, you need to get certified with the OMWSB and be a certified minority women-owned firm. And so what concerns me about this study is that tool, or that database, was not used to really identify who's available. I understand all the legal reasons and the statistical significance reasons, but I do think when you don't use that tool, you miss the opportunity to identify firms that could be considered as available to be utilized when you're trying to determine what the gap is and what the disparity is. The other thing I think is important to do is to explore why firms with capacity, but were not willing to do city work. Because it's really, to me, part of the challenge. There's firms out there that have capacity to do work, but they're unwilling to work with the city or PDC. And we need to get those businesses engaged and get those firms utilized so they can hire people from the community. A couple of comments I have, a commitment to change. I'm glad to see that you're looking at the shelter market program, restructuring that. I'm glad you're looking at pre-qualification requirements. There's also been comments with regard to, and I agree with regard to evaluating staff's performance, including diversity goals in their evaluations to see whether they're hitting those goals to help hit diversity. And the other thing I think is more important, which has also been talked about, is more than outreach, one-on-one interaction between either the bureaus and contractors that want to be primes or prime contractors and subs to make sure that the work and the connections actually happen and not just general outreach. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Mr. Jones, I think you just made a point which I want to highlight, and that is wondering why some firms don't contract with the city. And if you have suggestions on how we can adjust what we do to be more friendly and to be more welcoming, help us to figure out, in addition to what's in the study, what else can we do to attract qualified businesses to bid. So thank you very much for making that point.
Sure. Gerald DeLoney, let's see, Self-Enhancement Incorporated, the Portland African American Leadership Forum, and the Billy Webb's Elk Lodge, number 1050, of which NAMCO did a great job of renovation about a couple years ago. So we are always in partnership with NAMCO. Now, the last time I sat in this chair, I was part of the Coalition of Communities of Color, another one, that delivered a disparity report here, which said that people of color in Multnomah County were doing significantly poor in all indicators of well-being that we take. And one of those is certainly economic development. And as when we sit up here and we start talking about this whole contracting piece, we're talking about whether minority communities can survive or not. Because if we're not putting the money in, and the onus is really on government, this is where we're paying our tax dollars. I can't make anybody else or have any stick over anybody, but when you're a governmental body, it is your responsibility to make it friendly towards minorities contracting. And, you know, I've heard people keep on using this word equity. I want to give a little definition that's real easy. Equity does not mean equal. Equity means there has been a disparity, and this disparity has been going on for a very long time. It's been going on ever since Oregon was a state, Portland was a city, up until this very point right now. And there's nothing being done. So if we start looking at those past evils, being equal does not turn anything around. It doesn't help anybody. Level playing field, I don't want a level playing field. I want a very unlevel playing field. I want a playing field so unlevel it tilts everything the other way so that we can start putting money where money needs to go. If we don't start taking that attitude, we are never going to get where we need to go. Now, the disparity report that I brought with the coalitions said that things are getting worse all the time. If we compare this disparity study that's before City Council right now to the last disparity study that was done, I'm willing to roll the dice with you to guarantee you that it says things are worse now than they were before. Now, when we start talking about legacies, that's not the legacy we want to live with. That's not what we're trying to push forward. We can afford to have things be worse than what they are right now. As we know, within our school district right now, 45% of the kids in school right now are children of color. By 2020, guess what? It tips to the other side. And if the way that we operate says is that we're going to continue to discriminate, and I know James used some harsh words, but he said racism. And whenever anybody uses that word racism, everybody gets uncomfortable. But I tell you this, when you hear that word racism, they think that you're being divisive. But if you don't do anything about it, that's what's divisive. Racism is divisive. And if we don't do anything about this, you know, I tell you what, answer your race problem and you start answering a whole bunch of other problems that are out here. Now, I'm sorry if I made people uncomfortable by using the race word, but you gotta answer the race word. So, you know, I'll end with that if we don't take the courage to do what we need to do to address this issue, it'll get worse over time, and we'll have a real crisis on our hands.
Thank you. Gentlemen. Thank you.
The next three are Herb Fricke, Penny Painter, and Anisha Furquan Pika. Oh, Peach, sorry.
Hi.
Hey.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mr. Fricke.
Not often you sit in the city and you can say, hey, to the mayor.
You can.
I know I can, Sam. Thank you.
Go ahead, Mr. Fricke.
Good afternoon, Mayor and City Council. Just want to thank you for the opportunity to speak on behalf of the Oregon Native American Chamber. I'm the president of the Oregon Native American Chamber. And I'm not just speaking for the chamber, because I wouldn't be here without the support of the Indian community. It's represented by several hundred tribes in Portland. I myself am a member of the three affiliated tribes from Fort Berthel, North Dakota. And particularly in the Indian community, we always acknowledge our elders as the ones that really support us in providing the leadership roles for our community. I want to thank the city and PDC for doing this study, and well as including us in the discussion. The study identified disparity in the use of Native American firms, but in particular pointed out the lack of availability of Native American businesses that can perform in prime contracting roles. I think that was true for other minority businesses as well as women business enterprises. We believe that implementing the recommendations of the study will go a long way to eliminating the disparities and start removing barriers to Native American businesses, and is particularly our goal as the chamber, the Oregon Native American Chamber, to assist the city in developing